What's up, guys? This is the Just In Time podcast, and I'm here with Salah. We're actually in Salah's house. So that was one of the things that we're asking, who introduces who? So Salah is one of my mates from uni, I think. Basically uni, yeah. He's also doing a clinical master's as well. He has his own podcast called Tea Buddies Podcast. So anything friendship related. I've been on the podcast a couple times as well. So anything friendship related, that's all Salah's business. So check that out for sure. Check that out for sure. So what we wanted to talk about today was, I'm just going to give a brief overview and then I'm going to pass the time back to Salah. Sure. So I got interested in this topic about how we make friends. And the specific topic that I was interested in was actually that kind of juxtaposition, the pooling between the two of like, I want to be authentically myself, but that will be like offensive to other people, and also trying to appease to every single friend group and then kind of like losing your own identity along the way. So that's kind of like what we're going to be diving into. But before we do that, I did want to give Salah a little bit of time to tell people, introduce yourself to the people of my world. So this is the whole Tea Buddies.
Yes, this is
in play.
This is how Tea Buddies started, actually. By offering people tea.
This is in conversations.
This is part of the introduction, by the way. So I started at Help in October 2018, but like officially, I would say it was January 2019. That was my batch. I was so lonely here at this place. I had no friends. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, let me do an Iranian thing, which is offer people tea. I mean, we don't offer people Chinese tea, but I'm in Malaysia. So I started bringing, I had a glass bottle that I would take with me to campus every day. It would only serve like 2-3 small cups. So we had to refill it a few times with like, you know, like paper cups and whatnot. I was like, okay, this is not working. Then let's get tea bags for everyone. So I went to the 99 Mart across the street, got a pack of Bo tea with Bo paper tea. Cups. Yeah, very Malaysian. Yeah, on the cheaper end. But then it was expanding and we were having tea like almost every evening at campus, specifically in the library, where it's not actually allowed.
Now everybody knows.
There was a closet that I used to hide my tea stuff in the library, you know. And then after, I think a couple of weeks, it was removed. And we didn't dare ask the librarian who removed the tea because, like, oh, it was you, right? So I got a locker in campus and I put all my tea stuff in. And I got reusable cups because more people were coming and I was like, I can't keep buying paper cups. And time has passed and now I use this one. So many a time I went to campus with this, with literally walking like this around campus.
This is how people recognize Salah, by the way.
Right.
The guy with the teapot.
Yeah, the tea guy. Yeah. So that's how I started making friends and that's how Tea Buddies started because, you know, that's how I met people on campus. There were people who had tasted my tea but didn't talk to me, you know. It was to that point. Yeah. Or who had seen the
pod.
Yeah, the pod and the set and everything, but didn't know who
was about.
Yeah, right. So this is it. So that's for the past 5 years that I've been at Help. Things pretty much revolve around tea and good conversation. Tea in both meanings, you know? Yeah.
Spilling the tea as well.
Right. So I think that pretty much summarizes my character as well. I'm quite a conversationalist. I spend most of my time, free time, talking to people, you know, going out, having coffee, tea. That's what I enjoy doing. People are the base of my interest, so anything related to people. I'm more of the people person than the idea person. So even whatever idea that I have revolves around
people
like, you know, my work as a trainee clinical psychologist also, it's like all people. So, yeah, and I have an easy name to remember because it means wrong in Malay.
I was like, I wanted to know, like, who was the first person that actually told you that? What's the name? Salah. Did I ask it wrong?
No, people started to look at me weirdly whenever I said Salah. They're like, Salah, like spell it out, S-A-L-A-H.
Just make it worse. Like, the exact letter for that.
And I didn't know why people were like, and they started calling me things like, I come from an ECE background, early childhood education. And the nickname, because Malaysians are all about nicknames, they never pronounce your full name. So,
what's the time?
It was like, how many years ago? Probably like 8 years ago, I was doing this and I was working with kids. So the people in the kindergarten had told the kids that this is teacher Odin. That's even, Salah Hadin is my full name. Pronouncing like Malaysia is Salahuddin. So they take the Odin part, you know, so I was teacher Odin the whole time. And
so instead of being Salah, he became a Greek god?
Yeah, right. I mean, things are so fun. In campus here in Hull, people, I had really long hair back then.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I used to dress all white.
White, like the Lord Jesus himself.
That's what they called me. I become the Messiah, that's what they called me. And when I cut my hair, they were like, what happened? I'm like, it's okay, taking a break. Yeah, so that's pretty much me.
Mm-hmm. That's actually one of on the topic of being a conversationalist, is one of the things that drew me to you, because I think for me, I like to have very provocative conversations. I think that started as I like to see reactions from people, especially if I say something very audacious. Most people, usually they get offended. They won't want to speak further about that. And that honestly, that humors me. So that's just for me. Okay. But but one thing I noticed, that being able to talk about very, very provocative subject matter. Now, this is just a generalization on my part. I don't think there's any studies on this particularly. But it's specifically with people who are either religious themselves or from a religion that is particularly stricter, which typically is Christianity and Islam, right? But the reason I can have those very, very in-depth conversations with those people is because I think that they have, number one, they already have an existing belief system, right? But they have gone that one step further to accept other belief systems, being able to talk about other belief systems.
What do you mean by accept?
Kind of like open to hearing the opinions of others. I think that because I do know some people that are from very, very religious backgrounds, very strict backgrounds, that once they have this existing pillar in place, they become very resistant to listening to other things.
Okay.
So those are the people that, if I say something very provocative, they get super upset about it, and that just amuses me.
Yeah.
But the very same kind of people that have kind of accepted that this is my pillar, but it's okay if you have your pillar. I would like to know what has grounded this pillar in yours. So then it becomes a very, what's the word? Holistic, kind of intertwining conversation. If you say the same thing, right? So that's kind of one of the initial things that drew me to you. But coming back to the actual topic, I think just now you started with saying that when you got here, it was very, very lonely for you. So besides using tea to kind of that, because that was the next question I wanted to ask, was how did you actually put yourself out there, go out and meet new people? Because I think it's different for somebody who is, number one, not from this state, and number two, not from this country. Right? Because that I can relate to you a little bit, because when I first came here, I wasn't from this state. So literally nobody was from Penang. They were I remember when I was in my foundation, there were three other people not from KL, and one was in one was from Ipoh, one was from freaking Seremban, and I didn't know anything about those two states either.
Yeah.
So then it was just the freaking outcast people here, and I would imagine that it would be difficult to find Iranian people here, versus me as a Malaysian. It's just a different.
Not state. That I was interested in meeting any Iranians here. Uh, 85 million of us back home, so yeah, and it's interesting because last time I even remember you telling me not only that for you, but also coming back from US, I guess, mm-hmm. like you spent a few years there, right? And you had to kind of like relearn your own
language
yeah. and culture and whatnot, sure. you know, right? So for you, it was like different layers at different stages of life, uh-huh. and then you grew up and you came to help. And yeah, so I think a part of me was trying to resist the whole idea that I need to start with this intro that I was in KL first. Mm-hmm. I was in the Gombak area for like six, 7 years, you know, when I came to Malaysia. Mm-hmm. 6 years, yeah. And the Iranian friends or even other friends that I had, like other foreign friends that I had in that area, were not very open to making friends with, you know, like different ethnicities in Malaysia. And they had good points. It's actually really difficult. People do not open up very easily, you know, like that's what I've seen in Malaysia, regardless of the race and ethnicity. It's the general thing. But particularly my Iranian friends were suggesting that you could never make friends with the Chinese.
I was just having a conversation with somebody about this, and I completely agree, but like, I want to hear your side of this story.
They also had good reasons, and it kind of like aligns with your idea of like when people are like quite religious, they may not be as open to, you know, even having, you know, relationships, friendships with races who are predominantly of other faith, you know, like for example, Chinese people, we have Christians, we have Buddhists, we have, you know, non-believers or whatnot, right? And two things you can't take away from the Chinese, you know, like you all love your pork and you all love your alcohol, right? You know, so
in a Muslim country, we say
right, yeah. right. So they had good concerns, uh-huh. you know, and if you want to go out with them, they're like, okay, I don't want to drink, I don't eat pork, so like, what do, you know? Yeah, I wish they had entertained those ideas, because they just kept saying that, no, I don't think you can be friends. I'm like, okay, I'll try. Now that you said I can't, you know, that provokes me, right? Yeah. So I came to help. Before help, I could not, for the life of me, make friends. And I believe the culture in KL was pretty much different from the one in Selangor, in my opinion, you know, having lived 6 years in KL and then moving to Selangor. It's like things are fast paced, people are busy, people don't have time for you, people don't have, don't care as much, you know, this is what I was exposed to at least. Very biased sample of people, so don't take my word for it. I'm sure KL people are amazing. So coming here, like, I would say Sungai Buloh is like almost end of the world. Yeah.
So it's not offending.
No. It's like very quiet, very calm, very like out of city kind of, you know, environment. And it's like university campus here, which is like a different culture. So I was like, okay, let's try. People told me I can't make friends with Chinese, right?
Typical guy thing is like, tell me I can't do it.
Justin, like from that, I've reached a point that I recently went to Ipoh with two of my Chinese friends. And these two people had made the initiative to call every restaurant or cafe that we wanted to go just to make sure the food is halal.
Damn, right. Son. That's next level. You know? Shit.
I'm like, so you told me Chinese people, like, come on, friend, now. Yeah. You know? I'm like, these are even more Muslim than I am.
I don't even know a Muslim friend that will call and it's like, yo, you guys halal? Like,
Lord. You know, and if it's like getting close to, you know, past prayer time or like, they're like, don't you need to pray? Like, I'm like, you're more Muslim than I am, right?
Yeah.
So I've convinced myself that it's not about race, it's not about faith, it's not about, you got to find the common ground between you, the human common ground between you and the other person.
The individual.
Right, right. And there is no formula to friendship that I can give you. This is how you start making friends. No, you know. I learned that every individual has its own formula of friendship. But the main principle is to be able to communicate, I would say, right? Okay. So you got to know what you lack that another person can offer. That's the first stage in friendship, you know. Like, what do you not have that another person can help you with?
But real quick, I think that sounds very transactional. Do you not feel like, I mean, like, I think that somebody listening to that will, do you want to like elaborate on that? Because like, if you're making friends, I would assume that we're making friends with people who have likeness of us, right? Like when you're talking about making a new friend, that would be, we have to have something in common instead of having something that I can provide that you do not currently have, you know? Like, so what do you mean by that?
I mean, like, it starts, of course, you know, every friendship, the first thing that attracts two people together, it's the commonalities, right? So I like this author, you like this author, you know, we both like Jordan Peterson. So like that becomes like, that becomes the starting point, right? Or things that you want in the future. I have this goal, you have this goal. So that attracts you to the other person. But somewhere in the middle, you got to find the differences as well, right? Because, I mean, it'd be an unrealistic kind of situation where you only befriend somebody just because you have things in common, you know, because it's not like that, you know. And if you have fed yourself this idea that we like each other because we are alike, somewhere along the way, you're going to feel betrayed, you know, because people do have different things than you that you may not have realized, right? So it's best to recognize them early on so you accept them for the things that are different from you as well, right? So
it would be more of a question of acceptance that like, okay, because you have this difference in me, like you are, we have commonality. So let's start there. So we first know each other, we meet each other, we make friends because we have something in common. And then later on, I will discover things that you do differently than I, and I need to be accepting of that in order to maintain the friendship.
I would say friendship starts with commonalities, but is maintained with the awareness of differences and the acceptance of it.
Okay.
Right? And it thrives when you actually, you know, acknowledge and leverage on each other's differences, right? So if I'm overly liberal, that's gonna poison me at some point. So the way I counter that is I make friends with conservative people.
Okay.
So I could get balance, you know, and I spend.
Are you overly liberal?
Depends where you put me.
Okay. That was just like sidetracking. Like, I was just curious about that. Okay.
Yeah, depends on where you put me. So that's how I see it. Starting with commonalities, maintaining with, you know, both commonalities and differences, and thriving through leveraging on the differences, right? Because that's where you are lacking and the other person got some materials, you know, some substances to give you. Whether it's transactional, you tell me what's not transactional in life.
Okay.
You know.
I think that also kind of lends to the whole, that initial example that I was telling you about how like, I am drawn to people who are typically from a stronger religious background if they are also open to have this conversation.
So you could poke them, that's it.
Yeah. So that kind of like plays into what you're saying about we may have something in common, like maybe we, like you said, we both are in the same university, we like the same authors, and that drew us together initially. But then you do have a lot of things that differ from me, but I think the acceptance of being able to talk about that and also accepting that you have a different opinion from me on that particular topic will actually strengthen and not weaken that bond.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, I believe the real stage of friendship when things get solidified starts only after your first disagreement or argument with the friend. Because that tests the tolerance in the friendship and the acceptance in the friendship. How much are we willing to disagree in order to stay friends, right? Because some people, the threshold is so low, first disagreement, done. I don't want to have...
Yeah, I screw up. And, I'm done with you.
Right? So I'm always scared in friendships whereby nothing dramatic has happened. Because I'm like, are we playing it too safe here? You know, are we playing it too safe? Are we scared of telling each other the truth? Are we do we just not care about each other? You know, because it's impossible that you care and you don't hurt each other. Because if you care, you're going to say something.
Yeah, actually, I love that so much, because that ties so much into like what Jordan Peterson said. And he said that like, in order to tell the truth, you need to risk being offensive. Mm. And like, I had a conversation recently with, I'm gonna steer this over to my next question, I promise. Sure. But like, I was having this conversation with this person about a very, very touchy topic. I'm not sure if I was, I'm not gonna tell you what topic it was on.
Tell me off camera.
Yeah, I want to know. But basically, so it was this girl, and I was talking to her, and she brought up this topic, and she said that like, oh, I think that you need to respect the people that fall under this particular demographic by not questioning them. And then I was like, yeah, right? And then I'm like, how? And then she said that, oh, in all, and the thing is that why I do this is to raise more awareness. Mm. And I was like, that sounds like a very contradictory.
Right.
Yeah, how do you raise awareness without talking about the topic? And she said that talking about this topic is offensive.
So?
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, what's wrong with that, right? Like, I mean, like we need to be able to talk about it in order to spread that awareness. And I think that kind of comes back to my next question for you, because just now I said a very generalizing topic about every girl ever. So we need to address that before we get canceled, like, or at least I get canceled. So I wanted to ask you about how do you think, especially for guys right now who are in the workforce, I think that because we're both master's students, I think we have a very different master's experience, because right now you're still in help, but I haven't stepped into like Cyberjaya for quite a while because we're doing the external placements already. So it's been like a year that I feel kind of like a working adult. And frankly, you don't really meet new people, right? If you're in this building, it's your immediate 360, the four or five colleagues that are there. And beyond that, it's a little bit difficult for you to now, I would like to make a new friend. Mm. Where do you go? Unless you already have existing social circles like myself, maybe I go to the gym, I play some basketball, I'll see people there and they're going to be the same faces. So again, after a while, that kind of saturates to now, if you want to meet another person, where do you go? And I feel that for guys specifically, I think that's really, really hard, because it would be super duper weird, at least for me. I mean, correct me, but I would like to think that I'm kind of like a very man's man from my own upbringing. Like, if I were to call up my guy friend, as like, dude, do you want to like hang out? Like, you know, I find that, at least in my opinion, a lot of my guy friends may find that off-putting. And this is not a judgment to the guys that I hang out with. This is a judgment on me.
I'm already judging.
Yeah, it's more of a judgment on me. Like,
what's happening?
It's like, if it's just like a one-on-one guy thing.
Oh.
You know, like just me asking another guy, you want to go like makan or something? Like, I don't know. I feel that's a little weird. And it's worse still if I just met somebody and I'm trying to get to know him better. Like I meet somebody in the gym. How would I now ask him out to like, I want to know more about you, except intentionally meeting him in the gym? You get what I'm saying? Like
how do you initiate basically?
Yeah. Because if I get this guy's Instagram because we're in the gym, and now I'm like, hey dude, you want to like hang out or something? Like, that it's kind of like, it's bringing the where the friendship started outside of the context of where I met you. So like, as a guy,
which is a very good point as well, you know, because I always sidetrack a bit, but it's relevant. So people do complain when they graduate that they lost all their university friends, right?
Yeah, for sure.
My answer is the entire friendship was built upon the common ground of university. You never took this out of campus. Off the campus, I mean out of academics, right?
Okay.
So what bound you together was assignments, projects, even the lunch that you had together was because you had a study break or whatever not.
At the same time.
Right. So you were like, let's go, you know, eat together. And I asked people this during my thesis when I was interviewing people about their friendship experiences. I was like, what makes the transition between a university friend and a friend friend? Mm. You know, like at what point does that university friend, classmate, whatever you name it, becomes your actual friend? The consensus among everybody was like when they have curiosity, when they're genuinely curious about me as a person, not me as a classmate, not me as a partner, academic partner or anything, which means taking that friendship outside university and do something out, you know, explore your interest outside university, go do things outside university. I don't know if guys, they do play ball, you know, or like go from to movies, I don't know, whatever, you name it, right? So you take it out, you visit each other's houses, you get invited to like open houses or like
festivals,
right? Exactly. So you're intentionally signaling that I want you to be my friend, I don't want you to just be my classmate, you know. Okay. So that's how you do it. You expand the common ground to other areas of life beside university, because the thing is, because every time that common ground, whatever common ground is, dies, your relationship is gone. So if this gym person is only like a gym buddy to you, the moment you stop going to that gym, you're no longer friends, because that was the common ground that kind of like connected you together, right? But Justin, like in my experience, there's no sophisticated specific technique, you know, like how do you do this, how do you I ask questions, you know, to people. I'm like, those who struggle making the first step, what are you scared of? Are you scared of hearing a no? Are you scared of being looked at as a weird person because you're asking somebody to go out with you one-on-one, like especially guys that we say, right? So is that a you problem, or is that, you want to call it like man problem or like the society's problem? I would like to say it's a you problem, you know, because the moment you take that fear off your head that, okay, so if he says no, he says no, fine. Okay, if he looks at me as somebody who's weird, does that make me a weird person? You know, we have a, I don't want to say that, saying no, it would be offensive. No, like, I mean, like, because we are not naming any particular people, I can say there's a saying in Persian that says, with the prayer of a cat doesn't rain. So, which means...
I'm trying... You definitely need to explain that one. I'm like, what?
Which means, not everybody's saying is worth something. Not everybody's, you know, carries meaning or carries... With the prayer of a cat doesn't rain. So if a cat prays, it doesn't rain. You know? We come from a very dry land, friend.
From a prayer of a cat. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So, if one guy, two guy, three guys called you, you know, weird and like odd and whatnot, does that make you an odd person? You're just trying to make friends, you know? So is that your fault that they get... Probably not. So, and you're like, especially if you're starting a friendship, so isn't that weird if we, you know, on the start of a friendship, ask them out one-on-one? I started like that with so many people, including yourself, you know, right?
Come to think of it.
Right. So I look people up. I see what they're doing. You know, I see what's interesting about them. And I'm like, I start with this. Hey, this thing that you do sounds very cool, and I want to hear more about that, because I think I'm doing that thing, and I think like if we could have a discussion, I could, you know, really benefit from that discussion. People love being heard, Justin. You're giving people like
a chance to speak about this.
And these are people with passions, people with, you know, a direction, with something, interest, whatever that attracts you to them, right? So you sit down and just ask them about what they're passionate about, and they can give you like a whole lot of lecture. They would enjoy it, you know, they would enjoy talking to you about what they like talking about. So for me, it's been like that. I would just hit people up and I'm like, hey, you wanna... But you may say, okay, it's a you thing. I'm like, okay, so how do I build that
resilience?
It's more of how do I how do I make the environment safe for the other person to even say yes, right?
Okay.
Because we're totally strangers now, and I'm contacting you on social media, and I'm like, can we meet?
You know? You wanna hang out?
Right, you want to hang out? My professional life is pretty much out there. Mm. You can see it. It's my podcast. On my LinkedIn, if you go, you can see a lot of stuff on Instagram whenever I'm active. I've made myself known as a friendship brand, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever my name's mentioned somewhere, they know what to expect. They know, like there are certain words that come to your mind. It's tea, it's warm, it's conversation, it's friendship, it's right? So people don't feel like they're not taken aback when I contact them and I'm like, can we have a conversation? Because
that's kind of like what you're about.
Right. I'm not somebody with a lot of secrets, you know, like it's pretty much out there. You can see what I'm about, what I'm doing. So that gives the security to the person that, you know, okay, this guy's, you know, stuff is all out. I can read it. I can already predict. It's difficult to go on a first encounter with a friend or a date when they have no clue whatsoever about you. And you're hard to predict, you know, because then like that's walking on thin ice, right? But my stuff is already out there. So I've already walked you through the intro without even walking you through the intro kind of a thing. So that's how I've done it. But it doesn't mean that you should have all those reputation in order to...
In order to make friends.
For me, it's all about the initial fear, you know. Are they going to find it odd? Are they going to find it weird? Are they going to find me this and this and that? I think that's the obstacle for most people. I mean, including yourself. And now that you said, isn't it weird? So there are already questions. Like, people would find it weird.
Kind of like stereotypes or fear. Fears, I think what you said, like fears. Fears is a good word. So that's kind of like what's stopping people from initiating friendships, would you say? Like?
I would say so. People are waiting for somebody to initiate it first. Most people that I've seen, you know, they already find the girl, the guy, the person interesting and attractive, and they're just waiting
for you to do something.
Yeah,
kind of like dating but with friends.
Right. That's why it's like easier if you go out in a gang, you know.
Yeah, and exactly. Then, right? I was thinking that as well. Yeah.
That's one way too. I mean, like people function differently. It's just not my style to go out in a gang and only then get to know people. That's weird for me.
Would you say that's more? This is just like my own curiosity, but like, do you think that's more of a like an introverted thing?
Which one?
Only wanting to go out with a singular person. Right?
Probably it is, because I am pretty much introverted, which people find weird.
Because we talk like
I'm you know, like, I'm the most outspoken. I'm the most, like, when I start talking about something I'm passionate about, it's hard to shut me up, right? But you see, this is how I deal with it. I interact with people a lot, but again, individually, like you said, because
So that's the difference of like going wide versus going deep,
right?
Like
right.
Being able to meet a lot of people at like one instance,
right?
But then kind of like developing roots, would you say? Like developing roots individually with each person to like, okay, how far can I maybe develop this relationship with you? Sort of like that, like.
Yeah. So it's more about, you know, whenever I meet you one-on-one, it's just me and you. So the back and forth of questioning, probing, whatnot goes much smoother because we get to decide what direction we want to go into and how far we want to explore everything, right? When it's group, it's thousands of topic.
Yeah, it's all flying.
Right? You're not concentrating your focus. That's why when you leave, there wasn't much substance from those talks. They were just like surface stuff, right? Whereas every time I go out with someone, there's a theme that emerges from that conversation, right? Because we were able to concentrate a topic, to exhaust the topic, in a sense. So that's my preference. I don't like small talks. I'm like, it's a waste of time for me because I'm super busy, you know, like how our profession is. Right, so if I go out, I want to learn.
Okay. Okay, that's on the topic of learning, actually, like, just because right before we started the podcast, we were having just like brief conversations here and there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you mentioned was that how, what was the test, the thing that you, the study, it was like men bond over activities,
oh, yeah.
Was it?
Like, right, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like how men and women are different in terms of, you know, how they bond with their friends. Mm-hmm. So the study was more on when men, women. My opinion is that it's more of masculinity,
femininity.
Right? Because there is no... It would be unfair and unjust and unrealistic to say that this is a man thing and this is a woman thing.
Mm.
Because men can be feminine and women can be masculine as well.
Yeah, but I think like the overarching generally,
right.
Like generally men would be more masculine, right? Like,
you can hope so.
isn't that a consensus that like
I don't know. But that's the honest answer. I don't know, right? I think people should have a good balance of both. Whether, you know, like there's a dominating aspect to it that men are like more masculine than women. Yes, there might be a consensus, but with this weird time that we are in, I'm not sure anymore, right? So I don't know. But let's go with the study itself.
Yeah.
So the study said that when it comes to men-men friendship, it's more of the activities you do together. Going for like basketball, gaming,
yeah.
You know, working on a project together.
Kind of like board games. Or
right,
like
yeah, board games or like being business partner, whatnot. You know, it's not much on let's sit and talk.
Mm.
You know?
And so the study was like, so how do women bond? Like,
yeah, that's the opposite side of, not the opposite, but like the parallel side of things would be not activities, but conversations.
Conversations.
Right? So...
where they can just
sit
and talk. That's kind of like the women's brunch kind of thing, right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the what's up girl question, you know? So it's like things start from there. For guys is like are you up for basketball this afternoon, and like I think it was like a previous conversation we had, you were like, yeah, I think I'll be more hurt if they excluded me from the basketball,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Like more than like you know, not talking to me.
Yeah. I think that because like the whole conversation today was more about like how do we kind of like make or maintain friendships and the differences between individuals. Because I think briefly you talked about how like if you're introverted versus extroverted, the methodology of making a friend, right? Like going out to a party, meaning like 50 people at once, versus kind of like, okay, now I've seen 50 people, I want to talk individually to like 8 of them. Yeah? And so like, I found this super interesting because as a guy myself, I totally relate to what you just said in that it would be so much easier and a lot more comfortable for me to begin conversations if we have something to start with, which is the activity.
Right.
Kind of like going to the gym, we're already here. It's going to be a lot easier for me to like, what are you doing here? We're gymming. Like, yes.
Right,
and then
right,
you begin
right,
to talk about. I've actually had quite a few conversations about with people in the gym about kind of like their life, their relationship status, their family. But it would be like, that would be very strange if I just asked you out, you want to go talk about your family or like something? But like, because we're already there, we're already conversing about this, like you said, this commonality.
Mm.
Now we can bring the topic into how do we differ? Like our life experience are not the same. Maybe the kind of workout that we're doing is not the same, and how does that affect your life and everything? So definitely, it was so intriguing to me when you told me about the study about how men bond over activities versus girls that can maybe just like, let's go out and talk.
Right.
Like the whole objective is just to go to a cafe, sit down and talk. Like.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's a matter of preference, right? So it's actually a good thing that you can bond, you can start something through activity if you're blessed or like skilled, you know, or like, you know, within an environment, you know, that you can play all those games and whatnot, you know. What makes it easy, if I were to put it into words, would be it's a passive start.
passive start, okay.
Right? So there's an activity going on. You're not focused on this individual, that individual. So we let the common ground does its
do its work. Okay.
You know? So you don't need to initiate anything. Mm-hmm. Again, goes back to personal, you know, preferences. Why I say I prefer more of like the intentional part of it, because mm-hmm. I don't have those things. I'm not a sport person. Uh-huh. I can't play anything for the life of me, right?
You make a mean tea.
Yeah, right. And that's a longer route for mm-hmm. me, right? To play with you first, mm-hmm. you know, and do the game and go through all that.
Because like you said, you don't like small talk.
Yeah.
It's an individual thing.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. So I have to put a lot of effort in it and then say, okay, let's now sit down and talk. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't have that kind of a time or that kind of energy or that kind of skills, like sports stuff, you know, to do. But if you have, that's the way. That's the way.
Yours is more of like, let's jump straight into like, developing this relationship.
Right. Uh-huh. For two reasons. One, I know what I want and I know what I can offer. Mm. I'm very confident about what I can offer. I know right off the bat that I can be a good friend. That one, I'm like, you know.
I love that confidence.
Oh yes. It's my life work, man. Come on now. Second one, in Malaysia is a temporary place for me.
Okay.
I don't have the time to go the long way, to be passive about things, to, you know, let things take, you know. So I become more objective in that sense, right? I know what I want and I have a short time here. I want to make friends. I want to get to know as many people as I want to before I leave this place. So that sense of urgency gives me, you know,
it's
the drive.
Malaysia, by the way, in case that was like unclear. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that gives me the drive. It's like Nietzsche's saying, right? Like one who has a why can bear with anyhow, right? So my why to friendship is very strong that I don't need to have like a passive phase of activities and bonding for me to start getting deep, you know, with people. So
that's a really good segue into like the other part that I wanted to talk about, because like you said, that's kind of an individual thing, is very personal. So how would you then kind of balance that out? Or I would actually say kind of like, for lack of a better term, sift through like all the different kinds of people, because you are somebody, I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, but strong-willed in the sense that, you know, I know what I want and I'm okay doing something that you may not be comfortable with in order to get what I want, because I have sifted through the chaff. I already know where exactly I'm going. Right? So, because from the clients that I have seen, and also just like personal friends and my own experience, I see people as kind of like falling into two categories. One of which is, I would like to say, is like where we kind of fall into, that we are more assertive in what we want. So I know what I want and I'm going to get it. And again, that risks offending certain people that don't share the same value system that we share, or at least to put it more simply, the methodology of how we're going to get where we're getting, right? So how do you balance that with this kind of people? Because I think that there's nothing wrong with doing this, absolutely nothing wrong. But there are certain people that now you I think that you definitely would have heard this phrase like, what do they say? I'm blanking out right now. They'll say something like, but no offense.
Oh.
You know?
Oh.
So they're using this as an excuse.
With due respect.
Yeah, exactly. Respectfully. That's like kind of the newer in thing.
I'm not racist, but.
Yes. Shit like that, you know? We are being assertive, not offensive, right? We may risk offending people, but the objective was not to be offensive. That's kind of like saying, hey, no offense, but your shirt looks like shit today, right? There's nothing nice. There's no positive feedback in order for you to say that. So there's this part of the spectrum where people like us are like, okay, I want to get what I want, but there are people that take it too far, where I'm going to act and say whatever I want, and you have to accept me, otherwise you are the problem. And I have met certain people that are like this, right? And they are rude.
Right.
They're not assertive, they're just plain rude.
Right.
And I mean, they still have friends. I'm sure they still have friends, right? But you are offending more people than you are making friends. And so that is one side of the spectrum. Mm. And the other side of the spectrum was where people are very, very, not, I don't want to use the word passive, but maybe they're very, very risk averse, right? And they kind of want, they want to make friends, but they're not sure how to establish their own personality in a friend group. So they just change it. Whoever's in front of me, I will be the person that you need me to be, or at least shut up about who I am in order to let you like me. So you see, they kind of pull into separate places. And I have seen most of the clients that fall here, like this is personal experience, because they're like, I want to make friends, but I feel that I'm not myself. Yeah. And I cannot be myself because they have kind of crafted this personality to fit all the different friend groups. And now there's like, what's left, right? So kind of like what you were saying, that I know where I want to go.
Yeah.
How do you balance that without being an asshole? You know, like the root part, let's start there. Like,
right.
Because have you ever, in trying to make a friend with your methodology, offended somebody, or somebody said that like, oh, that's too strong, or like, I don't want to, this is not how I make friends. Have you had these experiences?
You mean like I was too much for them?
Yeah, where you're like, you know, I know what I want. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, yeah. All my friends are like that.
So, all.
But I'm pretty much persistent. So you see, I think we've had this conversation before as well. Like the first time we talked about friendship, and it was on, I come from a background where people, the language we use is by default very romantic in nature, right? You can pick up a phone in Iran and the other person on the other hand would, instead of saying hello, would say my life. Janam, you know? Janam. So that's how we pick up phone, you know? Right? So coming to Malaysia and like calling people love, that's how I do it, you know? So I don't use the word bro, for example. If I want to say, I just use the full thing, brother. That's how I do it, you know? But like the other things I use is love, you know? What's up, love, you know? So that's how it starts. And people are like, what's with you?
You know, like, that's kind of like somebody who's British.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but that's my style, you know? And I use things like dear very, very often. It's not exclusively designed, in my opinion, for relationships.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or for like mother-son or like father-daughter kind of a thing. You know, everybody can use it. So I use it very, very naturally, very easily every day, you know. So that was one of the things that was too much for people. But this is the beauty of human connection, Justin. You know, you can surpass people's norms that they abide to within a society that they belong to when you individually connect with them.
Okay.
Right? People can say all sorts of shit and stereotypical things about the Malay, the Chinese, the Indian, right? When you friend them, there's nothing different between them, you know? Like as a friend, you don't call them, okay, this is a Chinese friend of mine. This is a Malay friend of mine. Like, in your heart of heart, this is a friend, this is a friend, you know? So, it's where you, when you unlock that part of somebody's heart, you know, they just, like, open up. You connect them on a human level, not on an ethnicity level, not on a politically, you know, I don't know, oriented level, or you connect them because they are good human being, because they're interesting human being, right? So, so when I do that, the things that by default people find weird, if I do it, becomes normal.
Because it's from you.
Because it's from me. Because I've made the effort to tell the person that, hey, I'm saying all that, I'm doing all that, but you can feel safe with me.
I think that's also being like when you're very, very close. Again, this is my experience because I grew up in an all-boys school. So the stuff that we'll say to each other is way off the rails. You're not going to say that to a stranger. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Definitely they'll lock you up. But because I'm so close to you, I don't mind saying anything to you. I can cuss you out to your face. Mm. I can say horrible, demented shit. But that guy knows that this is love. This is my way of showing you how close I am. It's like there's this guy that I play basketball with. The second we see each other, it's just cussing each other out. From top to bottom.
You greet each other with
kiss. Exactly. And I love that particular friend of mine is Indian because I attack his Indian heritage. He attacks my Chinese heritage. But the thing is, I'm not going to go to a stranger and say the exact same thing. So I really like what you said, that you can kind of transcend, even I would like to say transcend racism as well.
Yeah,
transcend
of course.
Racism, transcend ethnic boundaries and everything. As when you have that individual bond. So that's what I'm a very firm believer in the individual.
Right.
So not only individual differences, but the individual's power to act, to create, to incite change. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a beautiful thing I just wanted to add.
Something that's very magical about friendship is that whenever it enters any relationship, it makes it the best version of it.
Mm-hmm.
You become friend with God, you can do that.
Uh-huh.
You can be friends with your mom. You can be friends with your boss. You can be friend with your coworker. You can be friend with your love partner, whatnot. Whenever it enters that phase, you know, you enter a friendship phase with anyone, it just makes it better.
Mm.
You know, you can treat yourself as a slave of God. That's very different.
Yeah, yeah.
From you treating yourself as a friend of God.
Yeah.
You treating yourself as a subordinate to your father because he's your father and you're the son. Very different from you thinking that you are, you know, friends or like buddies. Or, of course, there are like, you know, limits to how much of a friend you can be with your boss, with your father, with, you know.
So there's still limitations around that,
of course. Okay. I mean, like, it'd be inappropriate, you know, if you're fully friend with, let's say, somebody who is higher in, let's say, professional rank.
You know,
you got to abide with certain,
still. So there's still certain parameters that we operate around, but you can still make it a good relationship.
Right, yeah.
So removing the power dynamic or power distance.
Exactly. Okay. Right. And something about friendship, Justin, when you build a friendship with someone, no matter how horrendously you thought of them before you make friends with them, you know, the moment you make friends with them, they are become so difficult to judge, in my opinion, right? Yeah, like you can say all you want about Chinese people, about Indian people, about the Malay. Go make friends with them and then try to judge them the same way. Because when you're judging, you know, the Malay or like the people based on race, you know, the white, the black, the what, you are judging based on, there's no names. It's just a label, you know.
Yeah.
You're putting everybody into one box. So the humanity is gone from it. You have detached the individuality of the person from them and have put them in a box with whatever characteristic that you associate with that box.
Removing the humanity.
Right.
Yeah, it makes it very easy to commit hate crimes.
Right. So you take them out of that box one by one, this Indian, this black, this white, this Middle Eastern. You befriend them because with friendship, there is no race, there is no language, there is no, you know, it's pure love.
Mm.
It should be like, if it's not that, it's not friendship in my opinion. Right. So it becomes very difficult to say something now, you know, like call all Middle Easterns terrorists, for example.
I want to hop on that real quick. I wasn't planning to talk about this, but now that you brought it up, I feel very strongly about that, where yes, we're not like judging an entire race or ethnicity on certain stereotypes, but you cannot remove that from the friendship, if I can put it in those words. Kind of like, again, let me use that very close Indian friend of mine. He has certain practices, behaviors that are very Indian, right? Not in a bad way, you know, it's just number one, like the food that they eat, the cultural relationship that they have in the family. There's that. And I think that for me, when I meet somebody who is of a different race, background, religion, anything from me, I'm instantly curious about it. And I think that right now in today's climate, that comes off as racist, right? Because to me, it's like, if like, let's just say for yourself, you're from Iran, when you tell me that like the language is very loving, to me, I'm instantly interested in that. And I would like to know how that kind of like translated into, number one, your life, but number two, your life experiences and how you view other things because of that. And it now becomes difficult because I don't like to remove that from the individual because it's a part of you, right? Even the celebrations that you have, the traditions that you uphold, that is all extremely integrated into who you are as an individual. Yeah. So I would say that like definitely not judging an entire race on that, but when I get you on the individual level, I want to know.
Right. So again, like good point you bring up. Yeah, my say on like taking people out of the box was more on, you know, resisting the stereotypical stuff that are derogatory.
Derogatory.
Right. Let's put it that way. Because otherwise, every culture has its own beauty and all. But even within that, Justin, the way I experience my Persian culture is very different from another Iranian friend of yours. Right. Right. So even without the general cultural norms that we talk about, my experience of it is just my experience of the Persian culture, right? I cannot be the representative of the Iranian culture in Malaysia or among my friends. It's not the right thing to do. I spent half of my life outside. You know?
Yeah.
I was in India for like a year and a half, and then being in Malaysia, this April would be 10 years that I'm in Malaysia, right? So it's like, even when I tell you about my culture, it's very, very, very individualistic, you know? So when I say I come from a culture of romantic language, that's Salah saying it. That's not Reza or Amir or like, who come from the same country, same city, probably like same religious or whatever kind of like background, they may have a very different experience. So that's the power of individuality when I'm speaking of it, right? But to answer your question, how my Persian culture would have translated into my life and then into my friendships and all. I personally grew up with a lot of poetry. A lot of Iranians can relate to that. Okay, so this is probably, in a larger scale, it's noticeable. So not every individual memorizes poetry by heart in Iran. But when you compare how many people read poetry by heart in Iran, compare it to like, let's say, people in Malaysia, the difference is very easily noticeable.
Okay.
You know, so at our New Year table, there is...
Is it kind of like the writings that you have?
Yeah, there is a book right there that I have. It's a collection of poems by a certain 14th century poet, Iranian poet, right? Called Hafiz. That book is on the table of most Iranian at their New Year, you know?
Okay.
And I would say, I don't have any stats, but, you know, like out of 10 people, you meet probably 6-7 of them have one version of that book in their in their collection. They may not have any other books, but they have that.
Okay.
It's like a Quran, in, you know, like, right? So people take poetry and literature that seriously in our culture, right? And they do things with that. There's a poetry recitation, but with the intention of what... it's like a tarot reading, you know? Right? Yeah, that's probably the word. The closest. So they open the book. And they recite, for example, the first verse that appears on the right or left side of the page, and that communicates something to them, right? So that's
kind of like a fortune cookie,
It's a kind of a fortune reading, but with poetry. We do it with poetry, right? So for me, it was a lot of poetry reading growing up. And also I do calligraphy as well. I picked it up from my mom, and then both of us went to professional training together.
It shows.
Right. So when you do calligraphy, you actually memorize those mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. that you write down, right? And not only memorize, but in order to perfect it, you have to meditate on that mm-hmm. piece of poetry. So to write one line of calligraphed verse of poetry, it may take 1 week for me to like practice, and then I write it. So I've lived with that verse for a week, right? That translates into your life whether you want it or not.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
That's kind of like reading, right? Like when you read, then you kind of like expand your own experiences, and that's right. going to translate into how you speak as right. well. Yeah.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So when I speak to people, it has a very floral description, yeah. you know, to it when I talk to people. There's a lot of analogies that I use. There's a lot of, you know, you can say something and it instantly reminds me of a verse, right?
And I can say that you are very unapologetically like that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
And I think that that's not going to gel well with a lot, not a lot, with everybody, right? Let's just say with everybody. But that doesn't mean that you're going to change or alter how you are in order to like fit everybody, but you're also not going to be intentionally offensive.
Yeah, I mean like why should I abandon something that's the most beautiful thing about me, right? Mm-hmm. which is this is making me unique, this is mm-hmm. making me stand out, this is making people interested in the way I talk and what I say and how I explain things, right? So why should I change it because one person got offended, two people got offended, three people got offended out of how many millions?
Yeah, but okay, now I want to actually switch real quick into a clinical perspective because I adopt that 100%, exactly what you said. But how do we now know when that crosses the line? You know, because you're right in to say that like this is such a ingrained part of me, right? And I love all the bits of me that make me like this. Mm-mm. So how do you now differentiate somebody who has taken this and is like, why should I change? Because this exact line of thinking can be very psychopathic, right? Because like, why should I change for you?
I don't care. What you say.
I don't care what you say, and I don't care if I offend you.
That's one of
the because the thing is that like the only difference that separates that from what you said and a psychopath is that number one, I know your intentions are pure,
right?
And number two, you're not intentionally trying to hurt anybody. Yeah. So I would say that like if okay, maybe we won't speak of it from the perspective of somebody who's like that, but maybe from the perspective of people who are around people like that.
Yeah.
How do we now navigate a friendship that has somebody like that in that group? Yeah.
Right. There are a few things. So first thing that I want to amplify is like your point on, I'm not saying it to provoke you. Mm. I'm saying it so we could learn, mm-hmm. right? Because otherwise, if I don't say it, you don't say it, we never talk about it.
Just swept under the rug.
Yeah, right? It's going to come back at some point uglier, you know? I don't want to do that. So uh-huh. so why not talk for it once and for all, right? So that's one thing. People think, like, I love provoking. Mm-hmm. I don't. Whether I enjoy the byproduct of it, that people... you know, because you're activating people's brains. That's lovely to see. The sight of people thinking, man, that's a beautiful thing.
And it shows.
I would like to frame the sight of people thinking and like, you know, put it up there. It's so beautiful.
Coming to a wall of people's faces is like, I don't think I want to come back.
No right. More. So I enjoyed that, but doesn't mean, I wish it didn't have to be that way, like that I really have to say something that you find provocative and then only then you talk.
Yeah.
I wish you just could talk like that. But since you're not talking uh-huh. and I'm here, I've paid for my education, you know, and this is the place to learn,
yeah.
right? I'm going to say whatever that needs to be said, uh-huh. right? I'm not going to be rude. That's a whole different thing, right? So the question was...
How are you dealing with somebody like that?
Somebody who is offended all the time, or like somebody who's rude?
Offensive. Yeah, that takes your line of how we both are, right?
Right.
But they've taken it over way past the line to like, everybody should accept me.
You ditch them. You ditch them. I mean, like, you know, okay, the thing is, if these people matter to you, if they mean something to you, you start by talking to them, right? Mm-hmm. This is my approach. I'm like, you can be as whole as much of an asshole as you want mm-hmm. to be, but if I care about you, I'll take you aside and I tell you that, hey, you're doing this, you're overdoing it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening. Whether you want to change or not, none of my business, but this will happen okay. if you continue doing this, right? So you convey a message if you care.
If that person is like right. close enough to you.
Right, okay. I think, oh, yeah. Or if you're whining so much about it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it when people keep whining about how rude other people are.
And but they do nothing.
They do nothing. I'm like, if you care so much
uh-huh.
that it offends you so much and somebody is rude, get up and say something, you know? But like all you want to do is just come back and whine and yeah. complain and like, so who are you expecting to make the change here?
For sure.
Right? If the person is so much of an asshole that they don't want to change, okay, you stop right there.
Yeah,
you know, you don't talk to somebody, yeah. Justin, that doesn't listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Save yourself some time, you know, and like go talk to other people who yeah. are interested in what you have to say, right? Yeah. So this is how you deal with them. If you care about them, you talk to them, you tell them that you're concerned about them, you tell them that you're concerned about yourself being their friend, mm-hmm. you know, and how much that's detrimental to your reputation, because I take those things very seriously. Like, if you want to be an asshole, it's going to change something in our friendship,
because
mm-hmm. I don't want to be associated with an asshole, yeah. right? So that's one. The other group that we wanted to deal with was, so these were the offensive people,
yeah.
right? So this is how I would deal with the quote-unquote offensive
people. But real quick, before you switch, now I want to actually change the narrative as to like, what if somebody is that person? So maybe they have been unconscious about it, right? So they've been doing what we do, doing what I want and kind of not caring about that. And now people come to me and they're like, dude, I think you've offended a couple people already.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so now they are the individual who has been doing the offending, but they're not conscious about it. Now, how do you kind of fit this into balancing between changing myself in order to fit other people a little bit more, or staying true and continuing to offend, even when somebody that I care about has already brought this to my attention? How do you balance
Justin,
this?
If your authentic self is all the damn time offensive, there is something wrong with your authentic self.
I like
you
that.
Know? Because yeah. people will be like, this is me. But how come everything you say, somebody takes offense?
Hmm.
Like, you can't always say that people are thin-skinned or know.
You can't always be that the world is the problem.
What's
right?
the common factor here? You.
you.
you know? So if you're the common factor in the midst of all those dramas, then probably you need to step back.
Uh-huh.
Probably there is something wrong with your... Okay, people take... This is, I think, very important to make a distinction. You being authentic doesn't mean that you're good.
Oof.
You can be a shitty person and be so authentic about it.
Uh-huh.
I think if you're a shitty person, you shouldn't be authentic at all. you know?
So many people need to hear that. Oh my God. Like, print a t-shirt.
Because authenticity deserves better than to be placed upon you.
Authentic doesn't mean... I love that. Holy shit. You know? That has encompassed so much of my thought process
right.
in like three words.
right. Because they use it as an excuse.
Yeah,
okay,
they do.
You are so much of a dark person that the only way you are going to tell people that I still have some good left in me is by shielding yourself with the authenticity card, right? So I'm shit, but I'm honest about how shitty of a person
I am. I'm being true.
I'm like...
I'm speaking my truth.
I'm like, thank you, you know, like, wow. Right? So if everything that comes out of your mouth is offensive, somebody's getting hurt with everything that you say, there's something wrong with you. Sit down and reflect, you know, and be curious. I think curiosity is the cure to so many problems, you know. So open up yourself to be criticized, to be, and that's how you cure your
ignorance,
rudeness, right? Because because see to yourself how much of that you can take of criticism from, like, where's your threshold?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if you're so authentic, how much authenticity from other people can you take?
I love that, because like what I've noticed, right, is that, I mean, for me, my personal thing is that don't dish out what you cannot receive.
Hmm.
That's why I have developed a thicker skin about jokes, because I love joking.
I
watch so many hours of comedy, and the thing is that, like, with people that I'm around, that was how we used to test each other about how close are we? How much can I joke about who you are before you tap out? And that was kind of like how, again, that was the environment that I grew up in. So that's why I am okay risking offense, because to me, the amount of offense that you take tells me how close we are.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I grew up with
a very good measure.
And the thing is that, like, I had a very good Muslim friend when I was in high school. And the thing is that in my high school, it's a 99% Chinese school.
Oh, yeah.
So to have a Malay person there, number one, his Chinese is already damn good.
Like, it's better than most
other people already. And the thing is that, like, you are an anomaly in this ecosystem because we're all Chinese. You get what I'm saying? Like, for one Muslim there, it's like, dude, there's 500 of us, there's one of you. And so I became quite close to that. And the way that we became close is that, like, what does your Quran say? You need to know. Like, and the things that I want to know.
Yeah.
And we would go back and forth, back and forth. And the more we did that, the closer we got.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I mean that, like, you need to risk being offensive to be good friends. At least for me.
Right. That's very true. This is the same friend that you told me you were teasing him by, like, eating pork in front of him.
Exactly.
That's the one.
I would choose when he's fasting. Only when he's fasting.
God.
If he's not fasting, I don't care, because it doesn't matter.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's like, again, that's how we would, like, test. And the thing is that, like, he knew that it was love. There was no disrespect.
Right. Yeah.
You didn't at all. Like, I was not going to force him to eat or anything. Like,
I've heard a lot, Justin, that, like people keep telling me every Ramadan, and this is my 10th in Malaysia. The coming one would be my 10th Ramadan in Malaysia. And after so many years, people still, my non-Muslim friends, still ask, are you okay if you eat? I'm like, I get offended when you ask me that question, you know? Like, what are you going to do? What's the other alternative? Starve? You know?
Are you going to fast with me?
Right. I'm like, what is this, you know? No, because it's like, I want to make you... Come on now. Like it's just unrealistic, you know? What are you trying to do here?
Like, virtue signaling, that's a big thing right now. But, like, very quickly going back to, like, being able to receive what you dish out. And I like that, because two things that you said was being curious. I really like being curious, because it's very difficult to be curious without asking questions.
Yes.
Very, very difficult
to
be.
Of course.
And for me personally, I've always taken self-reflection. Like, that's really, really high on my personal list. Because to me, I always reflect about, okay, what am I doing? In this scenario, in this specific, highly specific scenario, was I doing anything that was objectively wrong? Was I the problem? You know what I'm saying? Or was this a situational thing of which this person was more offended than he or she should have been? And that's not really...
Right.
I cannot control that.
Right.
So I always need to balance that too. And the thing is that you can't do that unless you actually take time to sit down and ask yourself really, really difficult questions, which kind of now leads me into the last portion of this, which was, if somebody is kind of constantly changing themselves, you know, so that's the other side of this spectrum. I mean, randomly, actually, from a clinical perspective, do you think that's an issue of, like a lack of self-image or a lack of self-confidence, or maybe just like he or she didn't receive any attention growing up? Like, what do you think?
I think mostly it's like lack of like a solid identity.
Uh-huh.
You know? So and that comes again with, I make it very simple for myself, and I use the same thing with other people. If we were to reduce identity to two questions, what do you want? What can you give?
Okay.
Right. I mean,
give
again,
take,
give
and
take.
Demand,
right.
Of,
you know, because this is basically encompasses every interactions, you know, be it professional, be it social, be it emotional, be it spiritual, right? In order to sustain yourself, you need to know what you want and what you can give, right? Mm-hmm. And that's basically your whole identity. You can build it based on these two questions. If you find it very difficult, like you don't know who you are and mm-hmm. whatnot, people even find it difficult to answer those two. Like, what do you want? I don't know.
I can picture a few clients that I used to have right. that would be unable to answer those two questions.
Yeah, it's very difficult, uh-huh. actually. And I feel so... as frustrated as I may be with like hearing, I don't know, a part of me really aches for them that,
yeah,
like a simple question.
Just to me, that means that you really haven't sat down to think about who you are
right.
and what you want.
Yeah. Right. And like, if I may, you know, interject here, like open a bracket. Some people have grown up in an environment that wanting is a wrong thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You cannot absolutely. Want. You can have what I give you and be thankful for what mm-hmm. I'm giving you. That's it.
Because I could take it away.
Right. Don't even think about the possibilities yeah. of what else you can have. Because mm-hmm. then you're labeled ungrateful, you're yeah. labeled, you yeah. know, like, are you questioning me
especially
now?
Especially an Asian, right. very ungrateful child.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, it's such a poison. Mm-hmm. It goes to the point that even wanting things, you feel sinful about it. Yeah, you feel guilty about sure. wanting things, mm-hmm. you know. Can I want? I was mind blown. This was mm-hmm. a friend of mine. Like, can I want?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, mm-hmm. you know. So, it's not an easy process, you know. But you got to expose yourself to a lot of possibilities and see mm-hmm. where you fit and what fits you, right? But two things. What do you want and what you can give? Right? Mm-hmm. So try to sit down and reflect on these two questions. And once you have an identity, then you can gauge better with mm-hmm. You know, interacting with other people. Because this, at least this is solid.
Yeah.
You know, if the other person that you're dealing with is not, at least you can choose where you want to, when you want to withdraw and when you want to engage. Otherwise, you don't know. They don't know. Yeah. It's just like...
I think I want to just dive a little bit deeper just for anybody that's watching that is actually in this kind of like pitfall. To go a little bit deeper, it's like, that also sounds to me like developing boundaries, healthy mm. boundaries. Mm. Because knowing what you want and what you don't is kind of like drawing a line in the sand mm-hmm, of like, mm-hmm. okay, this is where my acceptance stops.
Right.
As like acceptance for certain kinds of treatment, right? Because then that needs to... In order for you to define what I don't want, mm-hmm. you need to know where is the line of which right. I say that this you cannot exactly. cross. Everything before this is fine, mm-hmm. but here, no. Mm-hmm. And also, like what you said, again, my heart aches when you can see people that don't know how to want. Mm-hmm. They have been mm-hmm. taught not to want. Mm-hmm. And by definition, there is also then nothing that is not okay. Right? Because then you can right. you can do anything.
It's morally wrong.
Yeah, yeah, you can do anything already, and there's nothing technically wrong with that. So I would say that like going very, very specific to like, if I would like a healthier friend group, if I mm. want to be around healthier people, what does that look like to me? You know, like if I like reading, if I like playing board games, if I like playing sports, how do I now surround myself with people mm. that are like that, like you said in the very, very beginning, kind of like the initial part of friendship is that commonality.
Right.
So like developing that, what do I like? What would I like out of this friendship?
Mm.
Yeah. And in fact, what would I like out of friendships in general? I think
right.
like,
yeah.
that would be more of your expertise, right?
Like, yeah, for me, it's stories, man. Like mm. I love stories. I would refuse to go to sleep without my mom reading a bedtime Aww. Story. I knew many of them by heart, and whenever she tried to skip some of the pages, I knew the story. I dragged her back, you know. My mind was always stimulated by narratives, mm-hmm. you know. And I look at people as, you know, authors of very unique, beautiful, mind-blowing stories.
Mm-hmm.
And things start to change, Justin, when you believe that your story is worth telling and worth listening mm. to, right?
Believing that you have an interesting
right.
value.
Yeah, right. Because then you can, how those conversations start? Like, easiest topic to talk about is yourself, right? Because mm. you're living that, you're experiencing that mm. every day, right? So that's for me. You know, I say that my one of my expertise is like, it's I forgot how I phrased it last time, but it was something along the line of tea-induced intoxication for people who find it hard to tell their story. Something like that, right?
So instead of alcohol, it's
tea. I tea
get
people
them high
up.
On caffeine,
yes.
Caffeine from
people
tea.
Start talking about all sorts of shit the moment I like, see. And I mean, like, there are studies on it, you know, physical warmth and interpersonal warmth. So the moment you hold a warm, I mean, for the benefit of the audience, I need to summarize this whole study as well. So there were they were studying on whether physical warmth would affect interpersonal warmth as
okay.
well. So
okay.
classic, I mean, famous study. So they put people into two groups. Both groups are asked to continue an unfinished story,
okay.
right? To finish an unfinished story. So you read
verbally or?
I think it was written,
okay.
yeah. So you're given like a bit of the story and you are given a drink. In one group, a hot drink, and in another group, a cold drink, right? And ask them to finish the story. So when they finished, they compared the stories done by those who had hot drink and those who had cold drinks. Those who were holding a hot drink while finishing their stories had a more positive view of the main character and a more positive ending to the story compared to those who were drinking or holding a cold drink.
Okay,
right?
That's
so it's like when you say somebody is like a warm-hearted individual, right? Or the very soul word of warmth. When we say warmth, right? Like we're describing somebody who's friendly.
Yeah,
who's
it has a positive connotation to it. Right.
Compared to somebody that you describe as
cold-hearted, yeah,
you know, right? So this is actually studied and there's evidence for it. So when I say tea-induced conversation, it's that. And I don't offer people iced tea. I offer them freshly brewed hot tea. So that's friendship for me. Stories, right? I make the setting and environment, you know, most cozy and most comfortable for people to be able to talk about the most uncomfortable things. I think that's an art, you know. So that's friendship for me. That's why I'm able to invest a lot of time into meeting different people, because it's not that I have. Yes, it's transactional. I love the story that I'm hearing, so that's what I'm getting
that's
out of this, right? But it doesn't mean that I have an agenda here. Like if you are like a certain kind of person, then I may not like you because you're this
so
and
that.
So
that's the difference of what you were saying with, because one of my first qualms with that was that you're saying that it's transactional. Does it mean that it's a give and take? I think that what you just said kind of clears the air about that. That is not with an agenda.
Yeah. I mean, like, Justin, let's not fool ourselves with the idea that he likes me for myself. She likes me for myself. What is yourself? Aren't you but your skills, your money, you know, like your, I don't
experiences,
know, experiences,
yeah.
you know, whatever
stories,
assets,
okay, yeah,
stories,
yeah.
right? So there is something that you are offering, be it materialistic or not, you know, but there has to be something to offer. So when people complain about, again, to your question, maybe like it was the first question, how do you initiate a friendship, right? So to answer that question differently, I always ask people to go back to themselves and reflect, what do I have to offer? Because I'm always so fixated on what's out there for me before I like reach a conclusion of what I have to offer, right? Because it's always become about taking. And when you're looking for a friend outside of you, it's more of what Little Prince would code it, like you're looking for friendship in a store. And there's no store to buy friendship from. That's why everybody's left alone and without friends, right? Because you're expecting it to happen outside, you know? That there are ready-made people called friends, and you go and shop for them. You know, I go out and find friends. That's not how we call it. We call it making friends. We don't call it finding friends. Isn't that beautiful?
That's right. Interesting. Well, there's so many good quotes from you right. today.
This is one of the among the 11 things that I learned for the 11 years that I've been away from home, right? So the first thing was like, I've learned that you make friends, not find, you know, friends.
Intentionality to it.
Exactly. You have to put the effort in it. It doesn't appear out of thin air, you know? So when it comes to the question of how to make friends, so finding friends is out of, you know, the picture. When it comes to how to make friends, it's like, you make sure that you are someone, that you have something to offer. Because taking is easy. Taking is the easy part of the story, right? So, and when you have good things to offer, especially in Malaysia, nobody wanna be in somebody's debt. So they're gonna give you something. They're gonna be. I mean, like it's been at least my experience, and I realized this way early when I came to Malaysia that people hate being indebted to other people. So if I offer you tea, you offer me a good story, you know, and they would do that. I mean, genuinely, they would do it. So be concerned more about what kind of a person you can become, you know, more than what kind of friends you want to have. People may have different opinions, but in my opinion, once you have a good mission, good people would come along the way.
Okay.
You know?
So aligning themselves.
Right. It's the mission and the values that bring people together. It's okay. not the people that bring the values and the mission, in my experience and my, okay, you can see it, the story from that perspective as well. But my preference is like, I put myself in a pathway, and within this pathway, I expect and I know that I'm going to meet very cool people. And this has been the case for me.
Okay.
All right. This is how I find how I make good friends, because they are there.
Yeah. You know? But again, it's that intentionality of like, putting, maybe like summarizing everything that you've said is kind of like, number one, knowing what you want, knowing what you offer, and then intentionally putting yourself in positions to meet like-minded people. And I think that's why you said that like, you make friends, not find them. Because you needed to get these two things in check first,
right?
Before you know where to put yourself, right? And then, that's kind of like what this quote that I heard before, it's like, luck is just an opportunity that was presented to a prepared person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because for you to end up in this third step where you're putting yourself around like-minded people, you first needed to develop yourself, ask yourself, be curious about yourself first before you know where to go, where to start looking. So if I don't know that I like to play basketball, I won't go find a court. Right? So it's kind of like that.
Exactly.
I think that's a really good kind of like place to end off. And is there anything else like that you like to add, like an ending thing for people that are out there right now? They're like, okay, now I would like to begin the journey of like making friends with other people. Maybe they're like yourself, either a foreigner, or somebody who's at least not from the state. Like, what's like an ending line you
would give? Probably I can say two things, and these are two things that I've really thought through and exercised myself as well. First is the way I define friendship or a friend. I define it as somebody that you can tell your truth to and they won't run away. You know, so the fear of you abandoning me or me losing you is irrelevant. That's where friendship starts, right? If you're scared that everything I want to say is gonna like
cause you to leave,
right? That's not a safe space to be in. And if friendship is not safe, that's not friendship to begin with. The whole idea of making friends was that I can find somebody who's not my blood, who's not my flesh, but I can confide in as if it's my flesh and blood, you know, as if it's one with me kind of a thing. We belong to the same family, but I choose that, you know. So anything that goes against that value, anything that feeds into the fear of me losing you is against the whole idea of friendship. So if you're afraid of that happening in your friendship, that's something definitely to discuss with your friend, right? Like, why am I scared that you would leave me? You know, and why are you scared that I would leave you? Is it something I'm doing, or is it actually your fear, the way you've been treated and like, you know, your past experiences that's shaping this fear? So that's how I treat friendship. Somebody of or a friend, somebody that I can tell my truth to, and I'm not worried that they would leave me. And I am that person for other people. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I think that's what makes me attractive to other people. Because you can say, I don't even have that many filters. So yeah. Like you can say things the way you want it, because I want to experience the authentic you, the real you, the genuine you. And if it's ugly, I tell you. Uh-huh. I tell you that you look ugly. You know, like, I mean, like,
not risking being offensive, right?
I mean, your soul and not your face. Yeah.
Your soul.
Because your face, you didn't have anything to do with, you know. So, so that's the first thing. Second thing, it's more of a technique, more of a practice that everybody can do. People ask me that, like, how come you have interesting questions to ask? I'm like, because I ask those questions to myself. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking of, because questions are remedy to confusion, right? So every time you're confused about something, so I tell my clients that as well. I'm like, the emotion of confusion, the feeling of confusion, if you're confused, the remedy to it is like, put your confusion into questions that you can answer. And then tell me how confused you are now, compared to before putting them into questions, right? Because when your questions, it's just like jumbled up stuff. Yeah. There is no direction, there is no structure.
The process hasn't really been crystallized, it hasn't been properly thought through.
Yeah. It's all enmeshed, like everything all together, right?
It's like traffic, just like everywhere.
Right, and you feel as if you're confused about the whole thing because you haven't put it like in order. Mm-hmm. But the moment you ask questions, you're like, okay, I'm not actually as confused as I thought I would be. Yeah. There are things that I'm actually quite clear about, right? But there are things that I can't answer. So you put it into question. And when you put things into question, it becomes a mission. Because every question, pursue an answer. Like that's the mission of a question, right? And when you give that to your brain, the brain has this function of filtering out things that you can focus on, right? So the moment you pose a question to your brain, in everyday life, you're actually noticing things that are helping you to answer that question. I'm very much friendly minded, you know, in my brain, my brain are wired with friendship. Yeah. So when I go out there, the themes of friendship, I pick it so fast.
Yeah.
Somebody who's business minded looks at everything as an investment opportunity, right? That may not come as easy to me, but when it comes to social stuff, very easy.
Because that's how you're wired.
Right. Because I've posed those questions to myself, the part that I'm confused about, right? So I spend a lot of time doing that for myself, asking questions. And maybe I can share one interesting question with everybody who's watching and yourself as well. And let's see if you can answer this question. I mean, like I can ask you right now. The question is, what's one question that you wanted your friends or people in general to ask you or be curious about you in that sense that you never got a chance to be asked?
Didn't get a chance for people to ask you. Well, that's something for everybody to think about as well. I'm going to talk about this with him like off camera already. Right. So like, for sure. But that's something that it's very interesting because it's like you're giving yourself the opportunity to express something. And
right. This question is good in so many ways. I unpack this and then probably like we can end it on this. Like why this question is a good question. I mean, like on a one-on-one, you know, interaction, right? There is a lot of, there's just so much I can explore in a friend, Justin, right? I mean, like I can't afford to ask you all the questions. Yeah. I can't afford to explore you in all dimensions. My curiosity has limits, right? I mean, not that it has limits that I don't want to be curious about more things.
I don't know what I don't know.
Yes, exactly, right? So that is you, that question is you giving this friendship the benefit of the doubt. Like there's something that I could have missed, no matter how close I am to this person, to this friend, right? I may have missed something that he or she always longed to tell me. But even
but
she,
I didn't get the chance to do.
Right. And maybe they didn't find the right circumstances for it, or maybe they were shy, or maybe they were like, for so many reasons, maybe they never thought of it either, you know, right? But when I ask you that, what is something that you always wanted me to be curious about that I never was curious about, right? It's as if, you know, like it's like a game, like unlocking new city, right? So there, this city I never knew existed.
Yeah.
And now I've unlocked it and you have walked me into a new garden of your life that I never knew existed. And now our friendship has gone to like a new level. Just because I was curious about something I didn't know even existed, right? So that's something nowadays I keep asking people, and it's been quite an interesting journey.
Well, now you guys have something to use, okay? If you want to credit that, credit Salah. And again, I mean, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I hope that this has been helpful to whoever is watching. And again, it's always a nice conversation when we meet.
Yes, yeah. I love it.
Until the next time then.
Take care, guys.